We've all got scars, some on the outside and some on the inside. But we can't be defined by our scars. I've spoken with some extraordinary people about how they've become empowered by their scars. This is I've Got Scars, Baby.
Necessary. So we're here. I just wanted to have a conversation with you and talk a little bit about I've Got Scars, Baby.
Yes. Oh my. I'm going to be honest, like being in the hot seat is not
it's not easy,
it's
is
not
it?
It's not the most comfortable thing.
No.
But I'm glad that you actually suggested this because I do believe that it's important for people, especially when you're asking others to share their story and to share who they are, that you're open and honest with sharing yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, I always think it resonates more when people understand your connection to it, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously you're very invested in I've Got Scars, Baby. And you're invested in hearing other people's stories, right? Because I remember you sharing with me that one of the things that you had looked for over the years was other people's stories that you could relate to.
Yeah.
And I have the same experience whenever there's a period in my life when I'm going through something, I always want to find somebody who's going through the same thing so I don't feel like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
So that's why I was encouraging you to share your story. Not only because it's an extremely compelling story, but because of that thing where if it resonates with someone, it'll encourage them and give them permission to share their story. And ultimately, we help each other by sharing our stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that really is the reason why I wanted to do the show, pretty much. You know, I think that for me, my revelation came, and, you know, we'll get into all the logistics, but it came when I felt that feeling that, oh, I'm not alone in this. And so I think that when you do go through what you go through, like you said, you want to know, like, okay, am I the crazy person? Right. Am I alone in this? And so, yeah, that's why I wanted people to have something they can turn to, whatever the situation is, and feel like I'm not by myself. Other people go through it. How do they get through it? Okay, cool. Let me try to, you know, do certain things. Oh, that was a great tip. Maybe I'll try that. So,
And that's fabulous. Like, really fabulous. But the way you're saying it is like it just was, you know, it was a revelation, but it could not have been an easy place to get to. You know, it's one thing to recognize and realize that it's something you need to do. It's trying to come through you or come forth, right? Yeah. It's another thing to put the pen to page and actually make it happen. So talk to me about how those two things converge. Like, how did you go, okay, I know I need to do this, and then figure out and find the courage to be able to actually put it in play?
So I guess we have to go back to around the time that I had the kind of like my revelation. Again, and we'll go even further back eventually. Okay. But, you know, I didn't look at myself in the mirror until I was 25. Like, that was the first time that I looked at myself in the mirror, even though I was burned at a year and a half. And so at that time, it was for me, I always wanted to encourage people. I always felt like, you know, I never liked to see anybody feel sad, you know, just growing up. That was just kind of my thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because, you know, if you felt discouraged at some point in time, you probably don't like to see other people feeling the way you once felt. Mm-hmm. But I remember, you know, being in sixth grade, seventh grade, whatever the case may be. And, you know, friends would just kind of share certain things that would happen to them or whatnot. And so I grew up with this sense of, you know, I like to encourage people. Mm-hmm. And I remember being 25 and I was just like, okay, you know what? I'm going to write these songs. I am going to encourage the world. And I was just excited. Like, yes, it's going to happen. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, God, I'm ready. Let's go. And I really honestly felt like God was like, so you want to encourage the world, Audra. Is that what you're saying you want to do? And I'm like, yes, God, I want to encourage the world. And God was like, so you understand that you haven't looked at yourself in the mirror at all. You have not seen your scars.
Okay, wait, can we double back though?
Yes.
Can we talk about, because you said God was like.
Yeah.
Right. So that means by this time you were already listening to your God voice, your inner voice, or whatever we were calling it at that time, right? Yeah. Because you have to come to that place first to where you're having a conversation with self.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Man. Okay. So I think the best way, I was burned at 1.5 years. Mm-hmm. And 6 surgeries between the ages of 2 and 16. I covered myself. I hid from the world. And I wound up just, like, I would wear turtlenecks in the summertime. I mean, risking heat stroke and everything to hide my scars on my chest, on my shoulder, my neck, whatever I could do. And I just kind of went about life like that.
But there had to be some internal conversation.
Yeah, I felt like this was the life I needed, that this is just my lot in life, to be honest, for a long time. I just felt like this is just, it has to be this way.
Was it?
I didn't feel like it could be any other way until I had a really great friend of mine. We've known each other since we're like 13, 14 years old. She would always see me tugging on my shirts. Like if a shirt like went down, like I have a crew neck shirt on and it went down a little bit and it showed the tip of my scar, and I'm tugging on it. And one day when I was 25, early that year, she looked at me. We were in the car together, and she looked at me and she's like, "Why are you doing that?" And I didn't know how to take that, because she's a really kind and wonderful person. But I'm like, you know why I'm doing that. Why are you asking me
And
that?
She knew about your scars.
She knows about my scars. Okay. She's seen it. She's seen me tugging on my shirt. Like, she's known me. You know, we've known each other for years at this point.
Okay.
And she's like, why are you doing that? And I was confused. Like, what do you mean, why am I doing that? I have to hide my scar. Like, that's what I
was. Was it a conscious thing you did, or was it just like kind of autopilot at that point?
It was autopilot. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was on autopilot. I mean, you get out the shower, you bypass the mirror, you don't look until you put your pajamas on, and then, okay, let me go brush my teeth. Okay, let me go in the mirror and see. I can see my face, but body, no.
Now, let me ask you a question, because, you know, you, I should first say that we're family.
Yes.
We are cousins. But we did not grow up together.
No.
We are like second
cousins.
Or third. Are we second or third?
So second, because our grandparents are sister and brother.
And so then our parents are cousins. Yeah. And then that makes us second cousins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we didn't grow up together. And I must say, had we grown up together, I would have been your champion the whole time.
Aww.
The whole time.
Thank you.
But here we are now. Everything
yes.
happens as it is meant to, and I am your champion.
I appreciate
the whole
you.
Time.
I appreciate
and,
you.
And I also just have to say, you are stunningly beautiful.
Aww.
People are seeing you,
thank you.
Through a lens, but up close, milky, and in person, you are glowingly beautiful. And I will be very honest, your scars are lovely.
Thank you.
They're beautiful. And we'll get into that, the beauty of scars and the uniqueness of them. We'll get into that a little bit later. But so anyway, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about, because I've heard a saying that girls get their self-esteem from their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like I got my self-esteem from my father, because my father, you know, was the man who loved me first and always told us we were beautiful and there was nothing we couldn't, you know, weren't able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Having the scars what role did your parents play, or your father in this case, what role did your father play in helping to impact your self-esteem?
I'm so glad that you brought that up and asked that. It's interesting because, first of all, I'm a daddy's girl.
Same.
Love my, yeah, I hear you. Like, I love my daddy to pieces. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that my dad loved me, loves me, you know, kind of thing. However, this is an interesting situation because when I was burned, I was actually under his care. So I was under my dad's care at the time. I was a year and a half, and he was babysitting me and, well, watching me. You know, I was just with him. And I pulled a cup of coffee onto myself. And
so that's how you got, ultimately
got
the burn.
And so I didn't even know until I was in the midst of writing my book. And I talked to my brother, I talked to my sister, and they told me.
How old were you at the time?
So I was a year and a half when I was burned. And then not until earlier this year did I talk to my brother and sister in the midst of, you know, editing the book and just getting things together, sharing, you know, to share my story. And
so, you're just finding out.
I'm just finding out that my dad, now I knew that I was under his care, but I didn't realize that my dad still carried so much guilt as it pertains to my scar, to the point that, yeah, it happened when I was a toddler, but my brother specifically told me, he was like, yeah, you were probably around 16 one time he came over to the house and like your shirt. And I would, like I said, I always wore, you know, a crew neck shirt or something, but like a tiny little piece of my scar might've, you know, was shown.
Right.
And he was like, Dad cringed. Not because of my scar as in me,
right,
but because of himself. And he just felt awful. And I didn't even know. I did not know. All I knew was he, you know, showered me with so much love. But it was one of those things, I think maybe on a subconscious level, I don't know that,
so it's,
I didn't,
all retrospect,
we didn't talk.
Now.
Yeah,
it's like every moment replayed in your mind.
Yeah. And so now it's one of those things where, you know, he passed away 5 years ago. But it was one of those things where I didn't know that he felt that level of guilt.
Do you, how does that make you feel? Do you feel like you want to have, do you wish you could have a conversation with him? Do you have conversations with him? How is that impacting you in, you know?
Honestly, the things that I'm doing now, that's why I call it using the concept of turning your scars into your superpower.
Sure.
I want him to understand that I am not at all angry that I have these scars. If anything, my scars have become a platform for me to stand on, to assist other people, to help other people in their own journey. And that's one of the things I talk about, is it's come full circle. The thing that I thought was the ugliest part about me is now something I use to help empower others.
That's right.
And that's what I've always wanted to do. Like, I've always wanted to encourage people. Well, here you go.
Yeah. It's like a battle cry.
Yeah.
It's like a battle cry. It's a very empowering.
Yes. I want my dad to know. Absolutely. I want my dad to know, like it's all perfect. It's all perfect. Like, that experience, I am not at all upset. Thank you for loving me so much. And yes, this situation happened, but look, if I can impact somebody because of my experience,
sure,
in that way,
sure,
it's all worth it.
Take me back to the moment, if you can. Mm-hmm. Take me back to the moment where you had this awakening about I've got scars and what it could possibly be, because clearly the information couldn't have all just rushed toward you at once.
No.
I'm sure there was, okay, you have a moment, and then bits and pieces of the rest, you know, of what we call the download, right, start to come through. Mm-hmm. Take me back to the moment you realized this was a thing for you.
So that moment was probably when I wrote my song Scars. Now, mind you, I had the revelation at 25.
You're writing the song.
So, no.
Oh, okay.
I just had the revelation of basically when I had that conversation with God, and God was like, so you want to encourage people, huh? But you won't even look at yourself in the mirror.
Got it.
How are you going to do that? And so that started my process. I'll just say that was the start, the beginning of the process, because I couldn't argue. In that moment, I could not argue. I was like, you know what? Yeah. You're right. I can't go about my life's purpose if I am hiding from myself.
Yeah.
And so that then opened me up to, all right, I have to do my work. And what does my work consist of? Well, I have to probably look at my scars in the mirror. And so that took about, that was a 6-month process.
Really?
I literally, the process was, I would glance. I started with a quick glance into the mirror. So literally, I have a towel on after a shower or something, and I glance in the mirror. Okay, and I'm done. And then the next day, glance in the mirror, I'm done. And so it, I just kept it going. Mm-hmm. And it was easier for me to accept my chest scar, because I heard other people say, oh, it looks kind of like a leaf, or it kind of looks like that, or whatever. But my shoulder scar, because it was a bit more bumpy or whatnot, it's, you know, a little bit more, has more stuff going on. And I was just like, okay, I can't, I cannot. And, you know, so that was another process. But every day I just did work every day. And I looked and I looked, and the glances turned to, you know, more of a lingering type of glance. And then, you know, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. And then I was able to fully look without feeling disgust, if that, if I can say it like that.
Of course.
And so that was one part of it. That was one part of it. And then from there, though, you know, even though I could see it, and I, you know, after I got kind of, okay, I got this part down, I then had to let other people see it. That was a whole other thing.
Another part of the process.
Yeah. So I went to a pool party with my church choir. And I wore a 2-piece bathing suit.
With the church choir?
With the church choir, I did.
Okay, church.
I know. It is what it is.
Let the church say amen.
I bought a swimsuit, but here's the thing. I was like, look, I will, if they want to judge me on my suit,
y'all,
I don't even care.
Yeah,
I need y'all to understand. This is a breakthrough for me. Right. Like, literally, I moved into this.
It's perfect.
With, because this is the first time I've ever worn a swimsuit without a t-shirt. I never worn a swimsuit without a t-shirt, with letting someone see any part of me.
Right.
And so I did it. I was nervous. I was like in the bathroom changing, and then I came out of the bathroom. I talked to my friend, the same one.
Yeah.
That was like, why are you tugging on your shirt? Same one. And then she's like, come on, girl, you got this, you got this, or whatever. And I did not take a t-shirt with me because I didn't want to punk out.
And, that's brave, Audra.
Oh, but I had to.
Goodness,
I had
gracious,
to.
That's great.
I had to, and I walked out with a towel around my waist because I didn't want to just.
What was the feeling? What was the feeling like when you were walking out? You had a towel around your waist. You knew you didn't have a t-shirt with you, and you knew people were going to be seeing your scars for the first time. What was that feeling inside of you?
I was terrified. I was terrified because I walked out into the backyard. And honestly, I thought all eyes were just going to be like, zoop. And everybody was going to be like, and I just imagine their faces souring, you know?
Interesting.
But I said, okay, I'm just going to have to deal with it. I walked out. And here's the thing. I walked out expecting. I went over to where they were playing, like, now this was a really decked out backyard. So they were playing basketball on one side. And I'm like standing there like, is anyone going to see my scar? Oh, God. What are they going to say? And I'm bracing myself.
Sure.
Emotionally. No one was paying attention. Then I moved over to where they were eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, somebody's going to see this
scar.
It's going
to be over here.
It's going to be over
here. It wasn't over there. It's going to be over here.
It's going to be over here. Okay.
Right. Anything? Anybody?
Nothing.
Right.
I was like, okay, you know what? They've been distracted by these hot dogs and stuff. So that's what it is. That's why they didn't look, you know? And so I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to go over to where people were in the pool. People were in the pool. I'm like, hey, y'all. And I get in the pool too. Nothing. And I was like, you know what? They got this really dope water slide. Mm-hmm, and that's why people aren't looking at me.
Okay.
That whole time.
You were making an excuse.
That whole, nobody looked at me. Like I was strange or weird, or it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
All right, let's pause on that for mm-hmm. a second. Mm-hmm. Let's pause on that for a second because I think this is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Two things. Secretly, were you disappointed?
You know what? That's a great question. And honestly, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we create the narrative for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We got a whole story that we make up as to how people are, what their perceptions are, mm-hmm. what we're expecting. Mm-hmm. And in part, you know, depending on how or what you believe,
yeah.
you attract your own experience, right?
Yeah.
Some parts of our experience we actually attract.
Yeah.
We play
yes.
out the role and then we get what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when the people, the players don't cooperate, we're disappointed that no one is, you know, trying to play a role in the narrative that I created for myself.
So
I'm thinking, well, as I'm listening to you tell mm-hmm. the story, I'm thinking, oh, well, that's great. Nobody said anything. But then I thought, oh, but that's got to actually be a little disappointing
yeah,
for her.
Because it didn't feed my narrative. Because what I was expecting, it's interesting that you brought that up, because absolutely, I agree.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, what I was expecting was what I experienced when I was 3 years old. And when I was 3 years old, I was in ballet class.
Okay.
And in ballet class, that was the first time that, you know, I had to wear a unitard.
Okay.
So we wear the unitard as a scoop neck. And so I walk into ballet class. Now, mind you, as an adult, my scar is a bit more, like, it's a little more flat than
okay.
it was when I was tiny. So imagine a shrunken body, and this is more puffy.
Okay.
So my scars were more puffy. It was, you know, you could, yeah. So it was out there.
More prominent.
Prominent. And kids, being kids.
That's right.
They're like, what's that? What happened? And they're trying to touch it. And I'm like, this is my first time experiencing life outside of my home with, you know, mom, my grandma, like my dad, like they know.
Right.
They know. They're not asking me questions, but I get all these questions from these kids, and I'm in ballet class just trying to, you know, do my pliés and relevés and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most uncomfortable feeling. And so because I had that experience and it didn't really stop, like I could see the eyes on me, mm-hmm. I could see the, you know, the faces kind of, you know, cringing and all of that. And so I just remember asking my teacher, I asked my mom to ask my teacher if I could wear a t-shirt mm-hmm. over my unitard. And my teacher said, no, you know, she just wanted us to be uniform. And so I quit ballet class. So it was one of those things where I, at 25 now, at this backyard barbecue,
mm-hmm.
I'm literally expecting the same thing that I received at 3 years old.
Right. But yeah. that's a so at that point now you can connect mm-hmm. A physical scar mm-hmm. to an emotional point of trauma.
Yeah.
Because for you as a 3-year-old in, mm-hmm. in a ballet class, you know, little girls, all we want to do is dance, yeah. right?
Yes.
And as a 3-year-old experiencing that emotional trauma, now you have somewhere to connect that to mm-hmm. As an adult going to this party. So again, to me, it even drives it home even more how brave it was of you to make that choice at the pool that day. Yeah. Expecting the trauma, but then obviously not getting it, which again could have been, clearly was a major breakthrough for you.
Yeah.
I wanna ask a question about that moment, or if there was another moment, mm-hmm. or if it was a different moment, because you talk about the kids in the class pointing at your scars mm-hmm. and asking you about them, really just mm-hmm. being curious, because yeah. kids, yeah. they really don't judge
no.
until we sort of give the sort of perception that it should be judged,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Mostly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes kids can be mean, but at what point, was that the point, or at what point did you connect the scars mm-hmm. with the feeling of shame?
Yeah, that was the point.
That was it.
That was it. That was literally the point where from that moment on, and I in the book, I talk about being naked for the first time. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is there's a scripture in the Bible where it talks about like, okay, so you have Adam running around trying to hide himself, and mm-hmm. God is like, why are you running out? Why are you hiding yourself? Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I'm naked.
Who told you you were naked?
Who told you you were naked? Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that was literally that moment for me, is that was the first time I became self-aware. I felt like, oh, this is me being naked. So therefore, I must hide. And so, yeah. So,
but what do you do with something that is essentially, it's a part of you. It's not mm-hmm. something you can, you know, make go away. You can cover it up, but you're always aware that it's there. What mm-hmm. do you do with that? How do you deal with that as a child?
Well, you try to get rid of it. So, and I'll, there was a process. I had 6 surgeries. So it was between 2 and 16. I had about 6 surgeries.
So it was cosmetic surgeries?
So cosmetic mm-hmm. surgeries to try to get rid of it. That didn't get rid of it. You know, because you still have hope. You have hope that I don't have to, maybe I don't have to live with this. Mm-hmm. You know, and my scars go between my breasts. Mm-hmm. So it's also one of those things where you're 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the girls are going through adolescence and they're getting, you know, boobs and stuff. And like they have cleavage and they have these cute outfits on. And I'm wishing that I could wear the same thing. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, when it comes to fashion, It's almost like, okay, fashion, whatever. It's not even a big deal to me. But I know,
yeah, you know
that
why.
It's because, you know, trying to be fashionable when you're, you know, covering everything is very difficult to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so I just saw things that I didn't have. So I did everything I could to get it. So I've had chemical peels. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would, for 2 years probably, I would go like, once a week, and they would put like acid treatments on my scar.
Wow, that's
and so
severe.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and it's, and when I tell you acid treatments, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, so if you're okay, what's your threshold for pain today?
It's like glycolic acid,
like,
or
yeah,
something?
Like salicylic acid, like those type. Yeah, okay. So it's like, what's your pain threshold for today? Okay, you know what? Go. And I just lay there and suck it up as this acid is on my scars. And I'm just like, okay, trying to breathe through it. So it's that. I've had injections to try to get rid of it. And it, I mean, I've had compression vests when I was really young, mm-hmm. and just to try to smush it down. And so you spend time trying to get rid of it. So it didn't go away.
So to me, it's like you spend time willing to go through excruciating pain, mm-hmm. to either mask or hide or make, mm-hmm. the pain go away, because ultimately there's a pain that exists that's associated with, mm-hmm. the physical,
yeah.
Scar. Obviously the pain of the physical scar has gone away, the, mm-hmm. the initial, yeah. pain of that burn has gone away, yeah. but with our scars still exists some level of hurt, mm-hmm. that needs to be healed.
Yeah.
So that said, mm-hmm. when you think about having all this surgery, mm-hmm. having these acid peels and compression and things that would, I don't know, make it lessen the scar. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking that it's, or are you thinking that it's going to do anything for you on the inside? Did you think, yeah. that was the work that had to be done?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like if that went away, everything would be better.
My life would be amazing. I would be happy. I would be beautiful.
That makes me very emotional.
Like that, it was just it. I felt like I would be attractive.
Yeah.
If this was gone, I would be worthy. If this was gone, I would have more confidence. If it was gone.
Yeah.
That was it. That was literally it. That was all of, like, t-shirts and whatever else. Like, I wanted to show myself, but I couldn't, in my mind, mm-hmm. show myself as I am, mm-hmm. with the scars. What? That was, I couldn't fathom, like, that didn't even come into the equation, mm-hmm. that was a possibility.
Right.
To move about the world confidently with my scars, with people seeing my scars. What? That didn't come into the conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you ever looking for someone to blame? All those years you didn't know where, you know, what the real origin story was. Were you ever looking for somewhere to place the blame?
I didn't want to blame my father. That wasn't a thing that I felt like made much sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the only thing that I did, I placed the blame as in, like, why do sucky things have to happen to me? And so it wasn't that I was mad at God.
Got it.
It was just like, why does my life have to be so hard?
Okay.
Why couldn't I just look like my friend who's beautiful and flawless and doesn't have to deal with this? Mm-hmm. It was just more of that. It was just like, why? Why me? Those were all the questions that I asked for years. Mm-hmm. Years. Like, it wasn't even, it was just, I don't understand. I couldn't understand why.
I want to talk a little bit about beauty, mm-hmm. right? And so we still live in a racist society. We mm-hmm. still live in a sexist world, mm-hmm. and we're Black women, mm-hmm. who have historically been overlooked when it came to the beauty category.
Yeah,
you know, overseen when mm-hmm. it came to being heard.
Yeah.
So, was that something that compounded the pain that you were already experiencing with your scars, or was that like a whole separate issue? And talk to me about that.
Honestly, I feel like I was so consumed, really? With my scars. And I mean, and growing up, I was also chubby, had braces. You? Yes, child. Father, let me show you some pictures, girl. Yes. So it was that. And growing up, feeling just different, period. So feeling different because, like, I was raised an only child.
Okay.
But my sisters and brothers were at least 30 plus years older than me.
Oh, gosh.
So,
okay.
You know, nieces and nephews older than me type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being around a lot of adults and not fully knowing how to communicate with children, like people my age.
Got it.
And then having the scar and, you know, braces and chubby and
awkward.
All this other stuff. I'm like, yo, I ain't got no room for nothing else.
Right.
Okay.
I
couldn't.
Interesting. How do you... when you and I talked, mm-hmm. I was drawing some comparisons between emotional scars, physical scars, and mental scars. Mm-hmm. And something you said earlier about not being able to look in the mirror mm-hmm. struck me, right? Mm-hmm. Because even... as a woman who has experienced any kind of emotional stress or pain, mm-hmm. At any point in her life, sometimes it's hard for her to look in the mirror because even if it's something she can't see, she's aware that it's there. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I asked you about wanting to place the blame somewhere is because a lot of times if we can't find a place, someone to put the blame on, mm-hmm. a lot of times we're taking it on ourselves,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do to deserve this? Mm-hmm. What could I have done differently? And the questions just never stop.
Yes.
And they happen, you know, sometimes they still happen, which, you know, I shared with you. Mm-hmm. I have emotional scars
yeah.
also
yeah.
that, you know, they don't just go away when you, because you've gone to therapy or you've read a book or those, they don't just go away. Sometimes
yeah.
they crop up in different situations and circumstances.
Yeah.
And so you have to sort of have the tools to manage them.
Yeah.
And you also have to have your own set of, I call them bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got my own bylaws and mm-hmm. boundaries
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
of where I know I can be pushed to and I don't allow myself to be in those situations.
Yeah.
And then also understanding that I have to seek out healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a part of what I've Got Scars Baby
mm-hmm.
is doing and why it's really important
yeah.
for you, Audra, to give people a space to manage those scars, emotional, physical, and mental.
Yeah.
How do you think about emotional scars? Like, do you feel like when someone is telling you about their mm-hmm. Emotional trauma, or do you also feel the same way? Like, well, at least you don't have something physical that people can see, or do you understand that it's relative?
Great question. Oh my gosh, yes. Okay. So I have learned with my experience that I don't compare scars
That's right.
anymore. At one point in time, I would say, when I was going through it and
mm-hmm.
thick of it,
mm-hmm.
my scar is the worst scar you can feel. And I would go hard on why this was worse than your thing.
Right.
Like, this, but look, and I would list all types of things, but I can't do this. I can't do that. And this person said that. Yeah. Now I understand that whether somebody has a scar that could, they have a scar that's like mine, maybe it could be the size of a grain of rice.
Right.
It literally only depends on how you perceive yourself.
That's right.
How you perceive the scar. That is the only thing. That's the only difference. Because you can have someone who has, you know, scars all over their face. Like 90% of their body could have been burned.
Right.
Or scarred in some way. And they have all the confidence in the world.
Super confident.
Yes.
Right.
They rolling up in here like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
I have sat across the table from some people who don't have physical scars, mm-hmm. but have ailments in their body, who have had kidney transplants and deal with disease and deal with all types of things. And when I look at them and hear their story and hear what they've experienced mm-hmm. emotionally mm-hmm. and mentally, all I can say is you're amazing.
Wow.
And honestly, anyone who is still here, who's been through some trauma, who's had their heart broken, mm-hmm. who's not heard I love you from their parents, who doesn't know their parent, whatever. Mm-hmm. You're amazing, mm-hmm. period.
But why?
Because you are resilient, because you chose. You have made you have made decisions in your life mm-hmm. that you're going to show up.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself, I just think is incredibly powerful. And you have to celebrate yourself for that. Mm-hmm. You may not be walking around here like, oh, and I'm cool.
Right,
that
right.
may not be where you are yet.
Right.
But you're here. You're here. And I just think that's, we got to give ourselves credit.
But how do you make that decision every day or every week or the, you know, when you say, listen, I'm going to go out to this pool. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to do it anyway. How mm-hmm. does one find, gather, you know, the nerve and the confidence? Like, are there mantras? Do you have, cards on your mirror? Like, give us some strategies.
So for me, I did do something that worked very well for me. Because I dealt with so much. Like, okay, if someone said, oh, you're pretty, Audra, it would go over my head.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, my gosh.
You were, like, deflecting that?
Yeah, it was just like, you know, in my head, oh, you're just being
Steve.
Nice. You're being nice.
Steve.
And so what I had to do, like, even looking at my baby pictures, it'd be like, oh, I'm so chubby. And like, like yeah. that's where I was. Yeah. And so I did affirmations.
Okay.
In the morning, and I remember specifically, I started in October of that year. I did affirmations, and I just said, I am beautiful. It sounded like lies. Like,
fake
for
it
a
till
long
you
time.
Make
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So I had to, but I had to just kind of keep going.
That's right.
And so I did it in the morning when I brushed my teeth, at night when I brushed my teeth, and I just did that until December.
Let me hear it again.
So I am beautiful.
I am beautiful.
I would look in the mirror right after I brush my teeth, I am beautiful.
I'm beautiful.
And I would just say that. And it would go over my head, go over my head, go over my head until it started to land a little bit. So here's what I will say, and here's why I know that actually worked, is because I remember going to Detroit back home. And I hung out with one of my guy friends, super cool, like, you know, but he's like one of my homies. And he hung out with me. Everything was cool. Then I started my affirmations after I came back from that trip. And then I went back around Christmas time, and he and I hung out then. Mm-hmm. Now, he looked at me and he was like, you're somehow more beautiful. And I did not tell him, I did not share with anybody that I was doing his work.
Right.
And I just laughed. I literally told him this story maybe a week ago.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? I remember when that happened. And yes, so when I say that it works, it does work. And it's about shifting your subconscious mind. I remember seeing my baby pictures after that and saying, oh, I was cute.
Yes, you were. Had to be.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
There's this yeah. book by Florence Scovel Shinn.
Oh yes.
It's called Your Word Is Your Wand, like
Ooh.
Your magic wand, right?
I haven't read.
Yeah,
she's got
a book called The Writings of, which it's a compilation, or you know, contains
yeah.
a number of books. I can't remember exactly how many, but they're all little.
Because the Game of Life
books.
And How to Play It, I do.
The Game
I
of Life and How
that,
to Play
yes.
It changed my life. That was the first book I ever read that where I had my breakthrough.
Wow.
That began my breakthrough. breakthrough.
I love that.
And so her subsequent book, or one of her subsequent books, was Your Word is Your Wand. Mm. And it's all about the power of the word. Now, we know this from the word, right? Life and death are in the power of the tongue. Period. Yes. End of story. Mm-hmm. I was listening to something the other day where a gentleman said, let me ask you a question. Does gravity believe? Does gravity care whether or not you believe it's going to work?
Yeah.
No, it just works because it's a law, right? It's the law of gravity.
Yes.
The word does not care whether or not you believe it. Once you start putting it out there, you're going to believe it because that is part of the law.
Yes.
And so when we tell ourselves, whatever we tell ourselves begins to, and I always say this, I have mantras that I say. Mm-hmm. It began with that book. Mm-hmm. She's got a book of mantras as well.
Oh, awesome.
Positive affirmations.
Yeah.
And I started out just, you know, audibly saying them. Same thing. Yeah. Yeah. I am beautiful. I am strong. I am powerful. I am healthy. Mm-hmm. I am healthy. I'm wealthy. I'm wise. Yes. All the things I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, I've seen my word come to life. I've literally seen it. Like, oh, shoot, I said that and it happened.
Yeah.
From when I was young, I could trace back things that I used to say that I then one day would realize, oh, shoot, I'm doing this. This wasn't a dream. I actually said it. Mm-hmm. So I know the power of the word, the spoken word.
Yes.
But then I recently learned more about the power of the spoken word, because as an actor, the way we learn lines, or certainly the way I learn lines, is I have to say them out loud. Mm-hmm. If I say them out loud, I say these lines out loud, it impresses your brain. It just, your brain hears it over and over. And then when you get on set, you know your lines, right? People always wonder, how do you memorize your lines? Like, well, it's memorization. It's a skill. It's a technique.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that your brain does when you're speaking to yourself. So whatever it is you want to be, you speak it into existence. We've heard it. It's not a cliche.
Yeah.
And then I think there's another energy that you add to that is the written word, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, I am beautiful, I am beautiful, you can add to that, I am beautiful, as you're writing it down. Mm-hmm. I am beautiful. Or any of the things that you want to be real. So the book, the song that we write, the book that we write, those are powerful, powerful tools for us to begin to heal.
Absolutely.
Ourselves and then ultimately others.
Absolutely. I really believe you have to be intentional. And that honestly was it for me. Mm-hmm. And the driving force behind that is, in order for me to do and be who I really see myself being, I've got to heal. I've got to be in a place internally that's filled with love. I can't move. I wanted freedom.
Yeah.
And honestly, that really is it. I wanted to be free. And I think that's it. For so many people, it's kind of like, yo, just what do you want?
You know, there was a period in my life when I was going through it.
Yeah.
You hear me? Through it. But obviously the only way over it or around it is through it.
Yes.
I was going through it.
Yeah.
And I remember praying to God, and you know, I was reading something at the time, because I was always reading some books, self-help books, some information I was getting, listening to, I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I remember the material that I was reading was saying, you need to ask for the essence of what it is you want, right? Mm-hmm. So like, what do you asking for? A house or a car or an island? What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the thing that you want. It's the essence of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
What feeling will that thing bring to you, right? And I remember it being, when I had the moment, it was like, oh, I'm praying for freedom. I want freedom.
Yeah.
That's it. Everything else that comes is gravy. Mm-hmm. Just give me freedom.
Yes.
I want to take you back to something you mentioned about your homeboy and how he said somehow you're more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about relationships.
Okay. Go ahead.
You went there. I didn't.
Oh, Lord. Tell me, yes.
Tell me about, because as young women, and we're already in an awkward place, and, you know, it's not easy for us. We may not be as confident, and, you know, and we're not really supposed to ask dudes out or whatever.
Yeah.
How was it for you growing up and having relationships or not having relationships? Mm-hmm. And then where are you with that now? And what would you suggest mm-hmm. to people who see their scars, whether they're emotional, especially emotional? Because a lot of my emotional scars mm-hmm. were impediments to me having healthy relationships.
Yeah. So relationships. Let's just say it's difficult to have a relationship with anyone if you don't want to be seen. I'll just start it off like that. So my first love happened in high school. Like, we went to prom together, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, you know, at the same time, I will say this, and I joke about it now, but I joke about it. Like, when you have scars, mm-hmm. and I don't want anyone to see my scars. Mm-hmm. If you're, like, making out or something like that, first of all, what you're not gonna do is try to kiss me over here. Like, mm-hmm. no, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, my arms, the arms are fine. Mm-hmm. You know, my cheek, that's fine.
Okay.
But you can only see parts of me. And that was literally how I moved about and how I navigated relationships, is you get to see a part of me. Yeah. You get to see the part of me that I'm okay with. You get to see, okay, I'm cool with my face, mm-hmm. not my neck. We don't look at that. Okay. Not my shoulder, not my chest. Okay, thigh, my leg, that's fine. Then it's also emotionally, well, I'm not really connected to myself emotionally fully. No, okay, you know, I'm still hiding.
Sure.
And so, you know, you can have feelings and, you know, care for people, but they're only going to get so far.
Yes.
And so it's interesting, because my first love, and this was a thing, and I talk about it again, like, in my book, but I learned so much. But my first love turned out to be gay.
Oh, wow.
And I tell you, mm-hmm. jacked my whole...
you think?
My whole everything up.
Right.
And, you know, fast forward to now, we are very good friends.
Okay,
like,
good.
Super close. Good. Like, yeah. So, but that situation.
How long were you in the relationship?
So we went to prom together. Mm-hmm. It was that kind of thing. And then in my mind, oh yeah, you about to be my husband. We gonna get married. It was a whole thing. Whole thing. I moved out to California. Like, yeah, you know, he moved out here. Then I was like, oh, okay. Well, I think, you know, maybe we didn't have it. We broke up, and, you know, when we were going off to college. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's okay. It makes sense if we would break up going off to college and everything. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. Then he said, oh, yeah, I'm moving out to California. Oh, okay. Next thing you know, like, a couple months later, I'm coming to California. Okay. And in my head, white picket fence.
Wow.
And family. And for when he told me, because he and I, like, when I say we're close, like, he was like my best friend. Mm-hmm. Like, I trusted him. And he was the person that I felt like I could truly be myself with. And I never felt like I could be my full self with most people, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But he was the kind of person where...
But were you still hiding with him?
Yeah, yeah. I still hid my scars. But I felt like if I did show him if he did see it, I don't think he'll run away.
Right.
Like, I think he cares enough about me that he wouldn't want to run away.
But isn't it ironic that you were in a relationship with someone who was hiding?
Exactly.
Yeah, because you don't... attract what you want, you attract what you are.
And that is, it's so funny. A couple years ago, a mentor of mine showed that to me.
Yeah.
She pointed that out. She was like, you were both hiding.
Yeah.
Blew my mind.
Yeah.
And we
our mirror reflection.
We do.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why when it comes down to it, at this point in my life,
yeah.
I'm like, be you.
Yeah.
Whatever that you is. Yeah. Even if that you may not, you know, may put somebody on edge,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they hear, but be you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that literally is it. And then so that, because I had that experience,
mm-hmm.
I then went again and I started hiding. I went back and I started hiding my emotions. I would joke about this on stage, and I would say, like, I would date guys I knew it wasn't going to work out with.
Yeah, that's self-sabotage.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah.
You ain't got no job?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You live with your mama?
Right.
You got mm-hmm. like 18 kids?
Perfect.
Yes, let's go. You see what I'm saying?
Honey,
like,
yeah, I do.
Yes. Because you're like, hey, I know this isn't going to work, but I get to be in control. I get to manage my emotions.
And I get to follow the narrative that I've created for myself. The story is going to end how I decided it was going to end.
Yes.
Or you know, or not.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's very interesting to know that your ex was hiding and you were hiding too. I have... You know, a little bit of a story. So my husband mm-hmm. has a scar. He has a burn,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we never really talked about it. It mm-hmm. just, I just remember as I was falling in love with him, like one of the things that I loved the most about him was his scar,
because
mm-hmm. it was beautiful to me. It was so beautiful. It mm-hmm. felt nice,
mm-hmm.
and it was uniquely his.
Yeah.
It was uniquely him,
yeah.
like a birthmark almost. Mm-hmm. Like I could instantly identify my love.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as we were getting to know each other better,
mm-hmm.
I wanted him to know everything about me. I wanted him to see all of my scars,
yeah.
all of my scars, physical, mm-hmm. emotional, mental. I wanted him to know all of mm-hmm. them. The way I wanted to touch his scar without him recoiling or being ashamed or feeling yeah. embarrassment yeah. or anything. I wanted to have that same experience
mm-hmm.
by being able to share my scars with him
yeah.
and have him not judge me, but then also for me, more importantly, not to recoil at the thought of, well, what does he think about me that yeah. I went through that thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's where we have to get with ourselves first.
Yes. And that's powerful what you said. And I was just so not there. Like
yeah.
even after the relationship with a gay ex-boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
like after
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, I just remember, and this was early 20s,
mm-hmm.
but I remember dating a guy and—
How long had it been between the gay ex-boyfriend?
Yeah, and this person?
Mm-hmm.
It might have been like a year later or something
okay,
like that.
That's I was not just bad. That's not that bad. You didn't wait that long.
I was, yeah. it was like a whirlwind, but
right.
it was a lot going on. But it was one of those things where, with this new person, we're dating and all of that. Like, I actually. It was his birthday. I bought him a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared this on another episode as well. But I bought him a gift for his birthday. He loved the gift. And he kissed the tip of my scar as a thank you.
No.
Oh. Ciao.
Because I'm like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now that's precious.
Right.
At the time.
Okay. I gotcha.
I cringed. Mm. Because it felt like he was molesting me. That's what it brought up inside of my body. Like, that's the only thing I could ever think of. And so my body got tight. I froze there. Like, the quick, like, maybe half a second felt like 5 minutes. And I didn't say anything to him, is it? Like, I didn't scold him or anything, because I knew where it came from, a place of love. But I will never forget that feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's when I, like, that's where I was with myself. That's, like, the concept of any of this. Like, and we had been intimate before. Mm-hmm. But it was like, guess what's about to happen? Oh, wow. You are not about to see none of this. You're not about to touch it. It's not going to be a part. Like, you don't get, no.
Wow.
Like, I will walk out of the bathroom with a bath towel over my shoulder, mm-hmm. and wrapped like a toga.
A toga, the wrong, yes. Yeah, yeah. Are you, is there any therapy involved? Had you gone to therapy? Have you considered it?
I didn't go to therapy around that time at all. Like, I didn't actually go to therapy. I got some therapy here and there, maybe a couple months here and there, mm-hmm. in my 30s.
Was it helpful?
It was good to talk.
Yeah.
It was good to figure some stuff out, but it wasn't about my scar. At that point, scar therapy, mm-hmm. was the work that I put in, as far as I gotta get this freedom. Okay. I gotta be able to, you know. And then after I showed my scars to, you know, at the pool party and all, like, it was just a process. And I lay this out, like, in my book, what that process is. The process is like, yo, you, it's almost like being, and I kind of say it's akin to being on stage. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're in a theater, you're on stage and you have these lights on you. Like, before you actually do the show, sometimes it's good to just be on stage with nobody in the audience yet and taking in the lights.
That's
imagining
right.
that the audience is looking at you.
That's right.
And just experiencing that, like, allowing yourself to feel that element. Mm-hmm. And when you allow yourself to feel that element, when you start adding the audience, that doesn't really matter.
That's right.
Because sometimes it's just being in center stage. On center stage is the thing that freaks you out. Mm-hmm. So learning to move about life, they say that life is a stage. And mm-hmm. so it's like learning to move about life. Yeah, you may have something that's different. And if it's a physical something, it may look different. But breathe through that. Mm-hmm. Like, I had to learn to breathe through the people asking me what happened to my scar, or having a conversation with me and staring at my chest. Because I said, I gotta be able to be free enough to wear something where somebody sees it. Mm-hmm. And so I bought new clothes and all these, you know, I bought V-neck shirts and stuff like that on purpose, so I could force myself to get out of, you know, the being bound.
The prison. It's like bondage. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it was that kind of a process to start. Yeah.
What do you say to someone? Because a lot of, for you, mm-hmm. a lot of the focus is on a physical scar,
yeah.
right? But I mm-hmm. I always say sometimes emotional scars, and again, this was me, I said this, mm-hmm. emotional scars are worse than physical scars. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Because at least I have evidence of something that, mm-hmm. you know, I can place some kind of pain connection to, mm-hmm. connection to my emotional mm-hmm. trauma, stress, pain, or, you know, mm-hmm. injury.
Yeah.
But when it's an emotional injury, it's almost like it makes you feel crazy because mm-hmm. because you think it's not tangible. Mm-hmm. You can't yeah. see it.
Yeah.
So what do you say to someone? Scars of any kind, but what do you say to someone who lives with emotional scars mm-hmm. that, again, we don't know at what point they're going to be triggered? Mm-hmm. We don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you say to someone to help, for them to help them manage their triggers, their pain, their...
First of all, I would say, understand that just because a person can't see your scars mm-hmm. does not mean that they don't exist, that they're not real.
That's right.
They're real.
That's right.
And so...
And don't let anyone invalidate that they are real.
Please don't. Like, other people may not understand, but who understands anybody
at the end of the day? That's not walked in your shoes.
Yeah. Right. They don't understand. You could be married to somebody for 50 years and not understand them.
That's right.
Fully.
Right.
So nobody's fully going to understand what you've experienced because it's your lived experience. Mm-hmm. So be okay with that. Be okay with that. And then it's like we have to also, I think, really see what are we telling ourselves? And are we asking ourselves impactful and supportive questions? And I'll say it like this. Mm-hmm. When I was having my issues, the question was, why did this happen to me? That was the question I kept putting out. Mm-hmm. And I got, why did this happen to me? Why do I have to have this experience? Why blah? It was like all of that.
Same.
And your yes.
Same.
And your brain is going to answer, like literally your brain is wired to bring you answers.
That's right.
So what the answers that it can bring when you're asking those types of questions, it's going to bring up, oh, okay, well, yeah. Your dad did this, or God doesn't really care about you like that. Your life is going to be hard. Like all these sucky, terrible answers that you, what do you do with that?
Right.
But if you ask yourself impactful and powerful questions,
like what?
How can this experience serve me and serve my highest good?
Go make me cry.
You have to.
Right here.
Let it flow, girl.
Say it one more time.
How can this experience serve me? And how can this serve others? Mm-hmm. And first, it's okay to just keep it all on you right now. Mm-hmm. Because you might not be at the others part quite yet, and that's fine. But I don't believe anything that happens to somebody is just random. And because you are unloved or you are, no, I don't care how you, like, I don't care how you got here. That doesn't matter. It doesn't, the only thing that matters is you are here.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, how is this thing going to work?
It all has a purpose.
It has a purpose and it can serve you and it could be something really powerful in your life if you allow it to be. And that's when I talk about the concept of turning your scars into your superpower. It's because literally the thing that even for myself that I thought was the worst part about me can now be used to serve me and serve others and empower people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I believe that for everyone.
Do you think it's really important for people, because you may feel this way or you don't. For me, I need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I need to talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's everybody's, you know, that works for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it's important to talk things out? Because you have, like, this is a podcast.
Yes.
And it is a platform and a safe space for people to have the conversation and talk about it, right? Because I feel like the talking is cathartic. It's
absolutely
very helpful for, it's always helpful for me. And it's always helpful to know someone else has either gone through it or is going through it. It doesn't have to be the exact same thing, but okay, thank you. I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm not a sucker. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, things can happen to me too, but like you, how can I take this thing and turn it into purpose and healing for myself and for others?
It's a three-step process.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what I've kind of just seen within my own life.
Is that in the book?
Yes.
Okay. Three steps are in the book. Okay.
Process is in the book. But you have to acknowledge. That's the first step. Like, for me, I went and I just didn't want to acknowledge my scars. I mean, I was just trying to get rid of what I felt like was the pain. So I was trying to rid myself of having even deal with it. And so that happens and how you can rid yourself of an emotional scar without having to deal with the fact that you're experiencing it is you can, okay, yeah, I'm just about, you know, I'm about to have a glass of wine, which mm-hmm. turns into two and three and a whole bottle.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm just going to be dating randomly. Yeah. And, you know, we get it in, whatever. And you just all out there
yeah.
and you're not connected mm-hmm. emotionally to anyone. Mm-hmm. Because you refuse to be.
Correct.
It could be, you know, I just go shopping. And shopping's my best friend.
So you take on all these vices.
Yes.
Yeah.
You just pick up all these vices because, you know, you're trying to alleviate the pain. Yeah. And so...
Meanwhile, you're creating other problems.
Exactly. Exactly. So now there's all types of things yeah. you can create yeah. with that.
It's all connected.
So you acknowledge, hey, this freaking sucks.
Yeah.
I'm angry about this. I don't like this. This has hurt me. Talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Get familiar with that. That's what I did when I was looking in the mirror and hating what I saw. I didn't like it. The scar on the big on my shoulder, that is ugly. I don't like and you deal with it bits and pieces. You glance, you look away. Whatever that is, you deal with it. You see it. You're not going to deal with it all in one day.
But it's not ugly.
I thought it was ugly.
I know.
Yes.
And so have you gotten to the point,
mm-hmm.
even if you're telling yourself, I am beautiful,
mm-hmm.
have you gotten to the point where even you can focus, you know, dial in on the scar itself?
So,
as a point of beauty.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, but that comes later.
Right.
The first part is just like, look, I have an issue.
Okay.
Like when my friend was like, why are you? She got frustrated. She had never gotten frustrated with me. What's up, Keisha? Yes, I'm talking about you, girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, Keisha.
She don't. She don't talk about her. But she got it, and it wasn't said to me in a way that was just like, you know, rude. It was just like, why are you doing this to
like
yourself?
Get over it, or
it wasn't even that.
Mm-hmm.
It was with compassion.
Okay.
It was one of those things where that was part of the thing that woke me up, and I talk about it in the book too, because I'm like, she was just like, why are you doing it?
Right.
Like, why are you beating yourself up for having this scar? To the point where I had to say, why am I beating myself for having this scar?
Mm-hmm.
So that is the thing. Acknowledge, this sucks. Yes.
That's right.
All right, cool. So then the next step is embrace.
Mm-hmm.
You got to embrace it.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
It is.
That's a
it
tough one, because that's where you have to admit all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
About this is you. You're. It's just me, you, me, and God. And that's it. And you have to accept 100% of yourself
mm-hmm.
when you're embracing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nowhere to put what happens to you from that moment. That's
mm-mm.
the moment where you become completely and fully responsible for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is not, that's not the, it's not the pretty one. It's not the fun part.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's the most intimate part, because
yeah.
that is when you're getting to love yourself.
I love myself.
Oh, my God.
You're right.
Well, you're like, I had to be able to touch my scar, and I had to be able to, I was focused. I had to be able to stand in the mirror naked,
mm-hmm.
literally.
Well, that's a big
okay.
one for all of us. Let me be clear.
It is.
Yeah.
But I truly believe that in any healing process, no matter what,
mm-hmm.
like looking at yourself naked, and I mean emotionally naked, physically naked,
yeah.
whether you feel like, oh, I want to change this part or that part, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Fall in love with what you see now. Because what happens is, I mean, I have a whole story about that too, but what happens is that if you wait to fall in love with yourself when the scar is better, one, like when the scar is gone, or when you lose the weight, or when you have the money, or when you have the relationship, if you wait to appreciate yourself, mm-hmm. one, it's probably going to take you way, like a whole bunch longer to even ever get there if you do get there. Mm-hmm. One. Mm-hmm. Two, when you get there, you're still going to feel like not quite right. Like, oh, well, I have the stuff, but I don't feel better.
Because do the scars ever go away? That's why they're scars.
And that's the thing. They don't. Like, yeah. You're always going to, like, that was, I'm glad you said that, because mm-hmm. that was one of my things. It's like, the scar, as much as I try to get rid of it, it didn't go away. Yeah. So it was like, well, how do I move throughout life powerfully and with freedom? And how can I live a good life with the scar? And that is when you know that that's just your work to do.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the scar.
The scar, whether it's an emotional, mental, physical yeah. scar, is not going to go away. And I think the physical markings that you have are mm-hmm. symbolic of
yes.
that.
Yes.
That's the symbolism mm-hmm. of it's not going to go away. Mm-hmm. What I need to do is mm-hmm. accept it as a part of my journey, as a part of my experience, as a part of me.
Yes.
Embrace it, love it, and then let the world know that I love it too. And yes. it's okay for them
exactly.
to love theirs and mine, frankly.
Yes.
We're all human.
And that is the step three, the becoming empowered mm-hmm. by your scar. Mm-hmm. Because that literally is the next step. It's like, hey, this is a part of the truth of who I am. This is the fullness. This is my journey. And now I get to share with someone, because it's a young child, someone, little, a kid that needs to hear.
Or a grown woman.
Or a grown person. Exactly.
Because I'll say this, you know, we're coming up in a time, you and I, mm-hmm. where it's a little bit easier to express our emotions and have conversations, and we have social media, so we're able to see other people's stories yeah. and hear about other people's stories and podcasts and things mm-hmm. like this. But our parents mm-hmm. and their parents, they did not necessarily have the outlets that we have mm-hmm. to be able to heal their scars and work with their trauma.
Yeah.
And I think in part it's how a lot of that those ways of coping that are less than healthy ways of coping mm-hmm. got passed down to us because they didn't have these sort yes. of one three-step strategies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So again, it's another reason why I think I've Got Scars, Baby is really important, because it offers this generation mm-hmm. and then generations to come, obviously, because this doesn't go
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
And your
yeah.
book yeah. doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It becomes another tool to help someone else through their manage through.
Yeah. I'm telling you.
What do you want from all of this? Because
yeah.
there is a point where you
yeah.
when you just said
yeah.
I got to the point where I was like, look, this is me. I accept it. I embrace it. And then you're empowered by it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're empowered by it, you have to then begin, because you set an intention
mm-hmm.
when you set out to embrace it, face it,
mm-hmm.
and be empowered by it.
Mm-hmm.
You reached that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where do you take, what's the next level of intention to set? I intend to have people, or what's the next thing?
It's that. For me, it is all about purpose
mm-hmm.
and moving powerfully in that purpose. And I believe that my purpose is, I love to encourage people, to be honest. Like that,
Because you're an artist, like
yes.
you write
I'm
music,
an artist,
poetry.
So I have
like,
songs. I have, you know, like I'm a comedian. I'm acting and all these different creative ways to express myself. And that's the.
Have you ever used your scars in your work, in your comedy, in your
not
anything?
In my comedy yet?
Really?
That was my thing. I hadn't figured out how or if I could incorporate the scars, the physical scars, into my comedy. I talk about the gay ex-boyfriend. I'll do all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk about certain other life things. But that was my work to do, is like, oh, how can I
That'll
incorporate that? And I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've in writing and creating things for people to see. Like, media, I think, is incredibly powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And I learned, like, from watching certain shows or whatnot, I've learned so much about life and what I desire from life. And, oh, that's a great way to think about that. Oh, you know, so I've picked up a lot as it pertains to that. So for me, I just want to create things for people. Like, hey, cool, you may never go to a therapist. Mm-hmm. You may never go to a life coach, but maybe you'll check out this podcast. Maybe you'll check out this thing here. Maybe you'll watch this.
Maybe. I hope so.
I hope so too.
I have a little, mm-hmm. you know, just a couple of little word association I want to mm-hmm. play with you, if you will.
Okay.
Beauty.
Possibility.
Forgiveness.
Necessary.
Power.
Absolute.
Truth.
Wisdom.
I want to thank you for, you know, for allowing me to share your story, share in your story, for trusting me. Mm. I want to thank you for sharing your story with the world, and for being brave enough to write it down and to be able to inspire and empower other people. Mm. And particularly women who look like us, mm-hmm. because it's necessary.
Yeah.
We need it.
Yeah.
I need it. I needed this even. Hmm. And so what else do you want people to know? Is there anything else you want to add? Can you share the title of the book? The title is I've Got Scars, Baby.
I think that when it comes to life, and this is something even recent that just has been in my spirit, when it comes to life, I think we have been told and we've been taught wrong on so many levels. Like, I think we're taught that we're supposed to come to this life and everything is supposed to be perfect and flawless and filled with butterflies and good times and smooth and be smooth.
Right.
So to speak. Like, it's supposed to be a certain level of perfection, whatever that perfection is. But I believe that how do you have a beautiful story if everything is just butterflies and good times and everything is just, oh, you would never go watch.
That's not a story.
You would never go watch that movie.
Right.
You would never.
There is no such movie.
It doesn't exist. Right. Exactly. So if we get it in our mind that I didn't come here into this world for everything to be bubbly and fun and look at the doggy play and, you know, we didn't come for that.
Right.
We came to expand. We came to
I just expanded just yeah. now. Just now.
Yes. We came to expand. We came to grow. Our souls needed something.
That's right.
And wanted, like, we and it's amazing. And I'm not saying that you are just like, yeah, I wanted all the shenanigans and everything to be bad. I don't think life has to be bad. Right. I think when we have these experiences that are tough, that are hardcore, the people who've been on this show, they have been through some dark stuff. Mm-hmm. Where they're like, I don't know if I even want to be here type dark stuff. Oh, yeah. But everybody I've interviewed, everyone I've spoken with has said, this experience has opened my eyes and my heart up to something completely different that if I had never had this experience, I never would know the other side of it. And that is true for me. And I imagine that is true for you.
Definitely.
So if you're going through something that is hardcore, that is hurtful, that feels like pain, that whatever that is, keep going. And trust that on the other side of this is something amazing. Love yourself through the process, though. Mm-hmm. Do not be mad at yourself. Do not say, I should be here. I should be there. I should look like this. I should be making this kind of money. Whatever. Don't do that to yourself.
That's right.
Love yourself through the process and keep going, because there's purpose in it. And then ask yourself good questions. How can this serve me?
Mm-hmm.
How can it enhance my life? How can it help me to be the best me that I can be? And your brain will look for the answers and give you the answers. So that's what I want people to know. Like, you've got this. Turning your scars into your superpower. Yeah, that's not easy. But people are on the other side. They're waiting on you.
Mm.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
They are. And it feels amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Me being able to sit across the table, I want to say thank you to you. Because here's the thing. I don't take for granted the fact, okay, yes, we are family. Yes, that is wonderful and beautiful.
You never have. You never have.
But I don't take for granted your time, your heart, your energy. You wanted me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure, you know, I'm like, okay, this is going to be interesting. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that is a big deal to me.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for you. And I want you to know, and I want to say this just because I've always wanted to say this. But for the years that I have seen you, it has always inspired me. And one of the reasons why, like, even thinking about the concept of being an actress, I would write myself out of it.
Wow.
Because of my scars.
Wow.
And I just would, and I would look at you and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. She's doing amazing things. And I've always been so proud.
Thank you.
So I just want you to know, everything happens in the time that it's to happen.
It's true.
But I'm grateful for you and for this experience. I'm grateful for everyone that has chosen to share their experience with me.
I don't
take that for granted. And to anyone listening, you are amazing. You are powerful. You are worthy. Don't let your scars and the things that, you know, maybe someone didn't love on you.
Right.
Maybe someone couldn't show you your value.
Right.
That doesn't mean you don't have it.
That does not mean you are not beautiful.
That doesn't mean you are beautiful. Profoundly. So.
Thank you, Audra. I love you.
Love you too. Thank you.